Simon, so we were just talking about tightness and weakness within muscle capacity. So tell me a little bit more about that in a bit more detail.
Okay. It's probably the most interesting phrase I use when I write blogs and write about this stuff is when I say there's no such thing as tightness and no such thing as weakness.
Yep.
Exercise professionals at that point tend to throw their hands up in horror.
Yeah.
Because we're all taught, including me,
correct,
that what we treat is tightness and weakness and things like that, including a soft tissue therapist. What we now know is that these adjectives, and there's a whole host of them that we routinely use as professionals and our clients routinely use, and we're not going to stop the clients using them,
no.
But I'd like to try to get professionals to stop using them, is tight, weak, stiff, underactive, overactive, stiff, because they actually don't mean anything. There's no scientific link between tightness and what we do.
Okay.
But what we do is we tend to stretch it or release it. And if it's weak, we tend to activate it, condition it, or strengthen it.
Correct.
The problem is that link does not exist. The science is well established that that link doesn't exist. And that is frightening. It was frightening for me when I learned it. I threw my hands up in horror and said, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, what do I do? Help. Because we need to understand what that tightness actually means.
Okay.
And that what that means is what's actually going on inside the muscle to create the feeling of tightness or the feeling of weakness. And there are a whole host of variables there. And the phrase I use and my mentors use and they've introduced into this mix is the concept of muscle capacity.
Okay.
We all work with the human body. We all work with the human musculoskeletal system. And muscles can then demonstrate different signs and symptoms.
Okay.
And that's what tightness and weakness and all the others I mentioned are. They're signs and symptoms. But that's all they are. They're not what's actually wrong.
No.
And I'm putting a layer of knowledge in here, which I teach, you know, everybody from, you know, level 3 personal trainers up to physios, what these terms actually mean and how to work it out. Because the intervention for tightness caused by this is different from tightness caused by that.
Yeah.
Similar with weakness. I mean, what, you know, I've got notoriously bad hamstrings that demonstrate tightness a lot.
Yes.
I've got to use my own phraseology here. But I've also got glutes that don't like firing.
Yeah.
You know, so I've got weak glutes and stuff. And I've got the usual, and I'm sure you've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, tight hip flexors, tight hamstrings.
Correct.
Weak glutes.
Yeah.
Very common. Okay. The fun starts in saying, okay, those are signs and symptoms. What is actually causing it? And that's where I step in and help professionals understand what type of tightness it is, what type of weakness it is, because that will then guide the intervention.
Okay.
Okay. And this is where what I said in the session earlier, what's the right exercise for this person? Glute activation work or glute conditioning work might not be right for this person right now because the muscle's not ready for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the capacity to do it. If I just get a little bit technical, muscles require neural input to work.
Yep.
Tightness, weakness, strong, overactive, underactive are signs that that muscle's not getting the right neural signal. You can hit it with exercise as much as you want. You're just going to hit a brick wall because the brain is going to say, get lost.
Yes.
And you'll see, you know, a little match firing where you get glutes working and then they just fizzle out again.
Yeah.
And this is the reason, because you're not actually doing the right exercise for those glutes at that time.
Yeah.
Somebody squatting can have real problems, but it doesn't mean they can't get up out of a chair.
No.
It just means they're using different muscles because the brain's using completely different muscles. It's not the glutes they're being worked. It's something else. And this is what happens. If the glutes are weak, then the brain will use different muscles. And we now know, and this is what the real killer here, when the body is using the wrong muscles to do certain common functional exercises, like getting up out of a chair, that actually is the precursor to some injury down the line.
Yeah.
Okay. If we continue doing that and trying to activate those glutes using traditional conditioning and strengthening and activation work,
yes,
or traditional stretching and releasing for tightness, that's why it keeps on coming back.
Okay.
That's why the client keeps on coming back with those tight hamstrings, those weak glutes.
Yeah.
And that's why we get this cycle.
And is this why, again, you're saying with fitness professionals, we're going to introduce those specialists again?
Yeah.
So that, again, we can look at, like we were saying, almost an MOT. Mm-hmm. These are the bits that you should or shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
And then maybe further down the line, you can mm-hmm. incorporate these other glute exercises to then really have a kind of a full, well-rounded program.
Correct. You understand the capacity. So if somebody's got I'm not going to use non-firing because that tends to be a bit in the face of some people. That's impossible. Yeah. Because of course they're firing. They're not firing properly.
Yeah.
And we use the word not firing properly optimally by design.
Okay.
Basically means the signal's not getting to that muscle.
Yeah.
The brain has sort of decided not to send that right signal.
Yeah.
Something has happened to that muscle physiologically, biomechanically,
yeah,
and biochemically, a combination of those three things, which is stopping that muscle working.
Yeah.
The same thing has happened to the hamstrings that are tight. Physiological change, biomechanical change, and biochemical change to those hamstrings is causing them to be, or appear to be, tight.
Yes.
Actually, they can be the same thing. Those hamstrings are probably weak as well.
Yeah.
Tight and weak.
Yeah.
I think I said to you earlier when we were chatting, you can be tight, you can be weak, you can be tight and weak.
Yes.
You can be weak but not tight, you can be tight, and any combination.
Okay.
And you can be overactive and underactive and overstrong and coming on, you know, fully, you know, or not turning off.
Yes.
All these things we see in muscles are simply combinations of physiological change,
yeah,
biomechanical change, and biochemical change. And that might seem complicated to work out, but it's not. What I do when I train professionals is actually tell them how to work it out for a given muscle. What's actually happening to those glutes? Why are they appearing not to fire? Why are they appearing to be weak? Same with the tight hamstrings or the tight hip flexors or whatever it is, adductors, adductors. It doesn't really matter. And I'm concentrating around the pelvis, but it can be equally my traps are on fire and they're not working properly or whatever. You know, my shoulder girdle's not working properly, or I haven't got thoracic mobility.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So understanding muscle capacity is simply saying, okay, so they're showing up as tight, weak, overactive, underactive, whatever we want to use. And the client will use those phrases. Mm. That's fine.
We've all done it, haven't we?
We've all done it. And I do it all the time. What I'm putting in is like getting rid of that terminology, insert muscle capacity and say, okay, what is the actual capacity of those glutes? And there's about half a dozen different types of capacity change that can that can typically take place. There are others, but generally speaking, there's about half a dozen different capacity types which we can introduce and say, okay, we'll just label them A, B, C, D, and E, and F for now.
Yep.
But if it's capacity change A, the intervention is this. If it's capacity change B and C, it's this intervention. D, E, and F are this intervention.
Yeah.
Okay. That way, once you know that, you can build an exercise program far more effectively, far more efficiently for that client. That squatting might not be the right thing for them right now.
No.
Stepping might not be. Lunging might not be the right thing. Asymmetrical work versus symmetrical work may not be right for them.
Yeah.
Upper body rotation work might not be right for them.
Yeah. Do you also think this is when, you know, some personal trainers, they get qualified and they think, I've got to give everything. Mm-hmm. I've got to tell them every single exercise. They must squat, they must deadlift, instead of actually breaking it down, like we're saying, getting that first part, getting them looked at correctly, then having it going forward. So you're not going to get that, you know, regression, keeping on those progression kind of steps.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Brilliant.
The step which we now understand to be true is that if you continue doing the exercises that are not quite right for that person, that raises the risk. I'm not going to say they will get injured.
No.
Because we don't know that.
Yeah.
But it significantly raises the risk of them sustaining a frustrating or even a serious injury down the line. Yeah. It could be a knee problem. It could be a back problem. It could be a neck problem, shoulder problem. It doesn't matter. But we know that, and this is why I say in my blog I've just recently written, which we can attach to this video, personal trainers are really the gatekeepers of the health and fitness industry.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to use personal trainer. But it can be any exercise professional. They're the gatekeeper because they see their clients day in, day out, week in, week out. They can pick up on these things. We only choose to go and see the therapy professional when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
So they don't see the clients as frequently. Personal trainers and other exercise and fitness professionals, and I include Pilates in this, do see their clients more frequently. Okay. Pilates is a slightly different one because people tend to go to Pilates when they have a problem.
Yes.
but they might go to Pilates because they enjoy Pilates.
Yeah.
Just as somebody might go to the gym because they enjoy going to the gym. So if I can get the exercise professional to pick up on muscle capacity issues early, we know, and this is why physios are really interested in what I'm doing here, we know we can actually reduce the number of people who are having to go and see physios through the NHS down the line for all sorts of muscle issues. And therefore, no, I'm not turning exercise professionals into clinical specialists.
No.
Actually using their skill set, which is an exercise professional.
Yeah.
Realizing a client struggling with a certain exercise, or realizing they're coming in week after week with the same or a regressed problem.
Mm.
You know, you might get their glutes firing for a particular gym session, but next time they come in, the glutes are still as bad as they were last time. They haven't moved forward. And that's actually then stopping the exercise professional progressing them to do more exercise.
Then I guess you're then, from the back of that, if you have a client who's not developing as they want to, it's that frustration.
Yeah.
My money that I'm investing into this is not good. And then they kind of go, actually, I'm going to drop out. So from the PT, long term, they might find the value that they're going to add is going to diminish. Mm-hmm. So their business is going to go down. So it is all about adding that value, which we discussed right from the start.
It's all about adding value to the professional, but adding better results to the client.
Yeah.
It's got to be a win-win.
Of course.
And you start integrating the professionals and it's a three-way win because everybody wins.
Yeah.
So that's why muscle capacity is so important. And what I and my colleagues can do is teach personal trainers. And I say level 3+ exercise professionals here because they need a certain amount of physiology knowledge to work out the muscle capacity of the key muscles that are typically used in most common exercise sets, which tend to be the upper body muscles and the pelvis muscles. Generally speaking, what's the capacity of those muscles? Okay, and I've got a protocol for assessing that very quickly and very simply, which can be done by a personal trainer. If they don't feel comfortable doing that, then a suitably qualified soft tissue therapist can come in and do that for them as part of maybe a new client take-on process.
Yeah.
But it can be done by either. Okay. There are certain deeper level tests which might be more invasive and might need the specialist skills of somebody who's qualified to do more invasive intervention or more invasive testing. But generally speaking, you know, 70 to 80% of what I teach can be done by a personal trainer.
Yeah.
It's the 20% which might need to be done by a soft tissue therapist.
Yeah. And I was saying to you earlier on, you know, as much as I've been in the industry for the number of years I have, it is about actually you've opened my eyes to think, actually, no, there are other ways of doing and working with other professionals in there, not just thinking, actually, I've got to be very narrow-minded and it's just about me and holding on to people. It's about going, actually, let's go and try and work with these other professionals in the industry and have then, you know, the best for, you know, client welfare. That's absolutely what it's all about. Yeah.
They need this common language. Yeah. They need to understand capacity, muscle capacity, rather than tight, weak.
Yes.
As I say, when I was taught, it was client comes in, you do your assessment, you do your chatting with them, work out, you get them on the table and you feel the muscles and those are tight.
Yeah.
Treat what you feel, treat what you see.
Yes.
What you see is not what you get.
No, a lot of cases.
And although we're treating what we're feeling, or in the case of doing exercise, we're treating what we're seeing, which could be a postural issue, it could be a movement issue. That's not actually what's going on. Those are just symptoms of capacity issues. Every single one of these movement issues, tightness, weakness, strength, individual muscle issues are all capacity issues. Work out the capacity of that client in a structured way, and you've got the blueprint for that client's body.
Brilliant.
And I call it a blueprint. So if somebody can carry around their fitness blueprint on an app, and take that to a professional and say, these are the capacity issues my body's got. Can you help?
Yeah.
That's powerful.
You've just set up another business.
Absolutely. The sky's the limit here.
Yeah.
But I'm realistic.
Yeah.
My mentors are working at the registered healthcare professional level, the physios, the osteopaths, the chiropractors, that level, and the scientists. They haven't got the time and capacity to work at the what I actually consider to be the really important level, which is the people working with clients day in, day out in the gyms and studios all over the country, like you, working with your clients. And if you can understand capacity issues, not only will you get better results for your clients, but actually we take clients away from the therapy professionals, which they may not like.
No.
But, you know, most people have their interface to the therapy space through the NHS. You know, yes, a lot of people go to see private people, but actually, if we can take away the stress on the physios and the NHS through people's knee problems, back problems, shoulder problems, which are generally speaking all caused by these early onset muscle capacity issues and doing exercises their body's not right for right now, and we can take away that stress, then everybody is a win-win-win all the way around.
No, fantastic.